Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, how is your portfolio looking these days? No doubt many of us are worried about the alarming stock sell-offs in the last week or so, but should we be worried? We have a seasoned financial advisor in the studio with us today to answer your questions. Thomas Brockley is a Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, and Branch Director of the Capital Region Office of RBC Wealth Management at Albany. He's also a Senior Portfolio Manager in RBC Portfolio Focus Program. He began his career at Prudential Batch Securities in 1986 and currently oversees client assets in excess of $175 million. Tom advises individual clients as well as institutions, pension plans, and nonprofit entities. In other words, Tom knows his stuff, and if you have a question about your finances, we want to hear from you. You can give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop Wall Post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag Vox Pop, or you can email us voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Thomas Brockley, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ray.
I'm going to have a tough time calling you Thomas.
No, you can call me Tom.
Because we go way back, yeah. And it's always been Tom. So another Del Mar boy makes good. Nice to have you on the show. Must have been a hell of a couple weeks, huh?
Yep. I mean, any time in the past 30 years or so in the business, I've seen this type of volatility. It always, you know, brings panic and emotion, which is normal that investors get. And people worry about, you know, their future and their present, really.
So how many, roughly, if you had to estimate, how many frantic phone calls did you take a week and a half ago?
Well, luckily for the way we run our practice and my philosophy on investing is we try to prepare ahead of the impending volatility, which is going to be either good or bad. Could be very, you know, big upswings in the markets, which are volatile, or big downswings, which tend to get the press and really create panic. But again, most of my clients plan ahead, and we've had conversations all along the past 7 year kind of bull run we've had, up, you know, almost 95% or so from the down period we had in 2007 or 2008. So I didn't get a lot of frantic calls, but we do put out a lot of information on what's causing it and what to consider, and you know, just encouraging people that haven't come back in to see me to come back in and go over, you know, their plan.
So experts call what happened or what is happening a correction.
Correct.
So that assumes then that it was bound to happen.
Well, you know, if you take a look, Ray, back in 2007 and 2008, we had a horrific issue with the markets.
Yeah.
The U.S. market dropping 53% or so over a two-year period, frankly. A lot of a different landscape at that point, with interest rates at a different point in the housing market, in the bubble, the mortgage issues we had. The technical term correction means a market decline from the high of 10%. When you start to talk a bear market, you need to get north of 20%, which we haven't done, and I personally don't think we will get there. And generally, the U.S. economy is not growing robustly, but it's not in the same position it's been in the last, you know, periods where we've had full-blown bear markets. So the correction that we saw really was the first major drop of 10% or more in 1,400 or so trading days. So from 2007 and 8 at the end of the last real recession or bear market, we had one notable correction in 2011, which most people don't even remember because it was happened so quickly.
It was a little blip.
It was an 11% decline or so that happened extremely quickly. And at that point, people looked at their statements 3 months later and frankly didn't really see any negative issues. So they kind of forgot about it. But actually from top to bottom in 11, we had a 15.7% decline in the S&P. So, you know, we've had them. It's a matter of the press again. Sometimes every night you're seeing China and the boom and don't go broke. And media. So they basically kind of...
That's what we do.
They force them fear. You know?
All right, Tom, we have many calls. Thomas Brockley is our guest. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-348-2551. Let's start with Merle in Argyle. Merle.
Hi.
Hi, you're on.
It's a simple question. It's a 4% rule or the general rule. When we talked to our financial planner 3 or 4 years ago, he basically said whatever our assets were 4 years ago is what the 4% we could take out on a yearly basis. And then I heard just a couple of weeks ago when they had the other financial guy said, you just take out 4% every year. What's your opinion on the 4% general rule?
Well, that's kind of a good description, Merle. 4% is probably a general rule. Distribution rates that individuals need from their portfolio really depend on their individual cash flow needs. So it's important to kind of sit down with the advisor you've got and say, here's what inflow I have, here's what my expenses are, and then what will you need to make up from other sources of income? For example, most people retire and they're getting some type of Social Security inflow, potentially a pension, and then what they need to make up the difference is what they have to draw from their portfolio. That could be 4%, it could be 1%, it could be 8%. So when you start to get into the high numbers, I say high numbers, anything north of 5 or 6%, you start to put a strain on your portfolio if you withdraw consistently at those levels. And you know, one thing we don't want to do is run out of money in retirement. So 4% as a general rule, again, really depends on your individual needs. I'd say, you know, everybody has a different way of planning prior to, and then at retirement naturally is when you need your cash flow. So hopefully your portfolio is built to be able to produce a return that's equal to or greater than what your withdrawal rate is, and that's the important thing to kind of consider and look at.
So what I'm saying is, does that 4% general rule, does that go for a yearly basis or whenever you last talk to your financial planner?
No, I mean, usually you said it.
Let's say you came up with it. Let's say $8,000 you could take out.
You would generally look at an annual distribution rate for a distribution rule. So it would be an annual percentage of the portfolio. So if you had $100,000 in the portfolio and you were going to take a 4% distribution rate, or that's what you needed, you'd take about $4,000 a year.
Okay, Merle. Okay. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Thomas Brockley of RBC Wealth Management in Albany is our guest. Let's go to Frank in Stone Ridge. Frank, you're on.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a financial advisor who is a fiduciary, and I have a mix of stocks, international stocks, and I have an IRA, I have a Roth IRA, I have a retirement fund. My question is, I'm paying part of my, a percent of my money or fees to this agency to manage my money. When I was doing it myself, I was making, my retirement fund was going up $300 a month. And now that I am having an advisor take care of this, since about a year or 2 years ago, I'm making nothing. So I want to take either some or half or most of it and put it in index funds. Is that a smart thing to do? And if I do that, will I have to pay the tax on all the withdrawals?
Well, I think one of the things you got to look back at is what types of investments you were making when you were doing it yourself versus what you're doing now. You said you were in individual stocks now in three different types of accounts, an individual account, an IRA, and a Roth. So from a standpoint,
they were mutual funds.
Okay, so you were using mutual funds, and now all of a sudden the advisor suggested using individual stocks from what you're telling me. And
no, I think it's still mutual funds, but it's spread out.
Okay, so it's the same type of a basket. Now you have a fee because you're paying an advisor. So depending upon the period of time you look at, it really depends on the overall market as to what you're return should be. But generally, you shouldn't have a market that is positive if you go back prior to the past couple of weeks and have a negative return, even though you're paying a fee. You have to really look at that and make a decision. But as far as using index funds inside the accounts, which don't seem to be a bad idea, a lot of people do use index funds. Again, an index fund is an index of the market or the index you're trying to follow. So the S&P 500 would represent the U.S. market on a broadest base you can get. So that wouldn't be a bad idea. And the tax issues, I would check with your CPA, but generally if you leave it in the retirement account and just reinvest in an index fund from what you're in, there wouldn't be taxes as long as you don't remove it from the shell of the account itself.
Frank, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Thomas Brockley is our guest. So the best way to guard against swings that we have seen in the last week and a half is diversification of your portfolio?
Yeah, I'd say that, again, the panic, and most people who should really look at their situation and again, reexamine, are folks who maybe, and Warren Buffett said this one time, and it's been a premise in investing for a long time, the markets typically move on two types of premises, fear and greed. So we've had the last 7 years of real good markets, and people tended to get a little greedy and said, "Hey, I'm gonna, I went from a 50% exposure, let's say 7 years ago, to equity, and now it's 70 because I've had a huge gain in my stock portion of the portfolio. Instead of trimming that back, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they left it there, and now they've got a 70% allocation in equity when it should be 50. So one way to guard is to A, don't get greedy, and B, trim and rebalance your portfolio, not just in bad times, but in good times.
Thomas Brockley is our guest. We'll take a break. 1-800-348-2551. Back with more of your calls in a moment.
I've got 90,000 pounds in my pajamas. I've got 40,000 French francs in my fridge. I've got lots of lovely lira. Now the Deutsche Mark's getting dearer, and my dollar bills would buy the Brooklyn Bridge. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money.
Money, money, money.
There is nothing like a newly minted pound.
Money, 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 money.
Everyone must hanker for the butchness of a banker. It's accountancy that makes the world go round,
round, round.
You can keep your Marxist ways, but it's only just a phrase. For it's money, money, money makes the world go round.
Support for WAMC comes from George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. SPAC, presenting the Saratoga Wine and Food Festival and Concours d'Elegance, September 11th through 13th, featuring the Adirondack Tour Friday, Tasting with Chefs Saturday, and Jazz Brunch on Sunday. SPAC.org. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. AlbanyClipcentric.com. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. And Manny's TV and Appliances, family owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete. Available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We talk finance today with Thomas Brockley, who is Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, and Branch Director of the Capital Region Office of RBC Wealth Management in Albany. A portfolio manager, don't you know, and an old friend of mine. Let's go back to the calls. Nat. I think it's Nat, or is it not, in Rhinebeck? You're on.
Yeah, it's Nat in Rhinebeck.
You're on.
Thank you, sir. My wife and I, we have two old teenage girls. We are debt-free except for the mortgage on our house, which has a little less than $100,000 left on it. We have enough money to pay off the mortgage. I'm wondering whether we should or not.
That's a good question, and a lot of people have that same situation where, you know, you have a mortgage. I guess a lot of the issue there is what rate you have. Is it an older mortgage that's got a higher interest rate? Do you need the tax break you get from the mortgage interest? There's a few questions you have to kind of ask, and you can really financially just put numbers together and decide whether it makes economic sense. Because if your net cost of money after you get your tax break is very small, then maybe it makes, you know, little sense to go pay it off because you're making the monthly payment and it's affordable. But then there's another school of thought that has nothing to do with finance. Some people like to be debt-free. And if that's if you want to go to sleep at night and say, hey, I have no debt, my mortgage is paid off, and you can do that and you're comfortable, that's as important as it is to say, what's my net cost of money? So.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
Yep.
Thanks, Nat. We appreciate it. Over to Bill in Niskayuna. Bill, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are planning on retiring in about 11 years. She has the New York State Public Schools pension, so we'll have a nice income there. We have a little bit of money put away, but we recently have decided that we would really like to, in addition to our primary home, buy a large boat. And we want to start saving toward that. The cost of the boat is going to be right around $100,000. What do you think the best way would be for me to put that money away over the next 11 years?
So you want to basically buy the boat when you retire in 11 years?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so at this point, the boat's $100,000 today. The question is, what will the boat cost you in 11 years?
No, we're going to be able... the secondary market on large boats is
pretty soft.
Perennially soft.
Right. Yep.
We go into the market with $100,000 to spend. We'll come out with a good boat.
Okay.
Not to worry.
Right. So you can basically count on the $100,000 then, based upon your research. Now, how much how much can you save monthly towards that goal?
Well, right now we're spending just about all we make, but. You know, I have certainly heard the philosophy, you know, pay yourself first and all that. And I think we could arrange our finances in such a way that we could put money away. What better question is, how much do you think I should put away to get there, you know, and how should I get there?
Right. Well, I mean, simply if you take a look at 11 years and divide that out by 100,000, you're going to probably have to save about $800 a month. Amass enough funds. And I say that in the sense that over a 10-11 year period, you have some time where you can take a little bit of risk with that, with your initial savings and dollar cost average into something that's not a savings type or a safe account. But if you were going to say in 11 years, I want to make sure I have $100,000, you have to take pretty little risk, which means you'd have to save just about that $800 a month, and frankly, just in an interest-bearing account. But in the first few years, you could probably dollar cost average into an S&P 500 fund or some type of equity or equity income type vehicle, and maybe your return would make up some of that savings for you. And that comes down to that determining factor. If you can save $800 a month, you don't need to take any risk, and in 11 years, you'll have all the money you need. And if you can't afford to save that much, then you've got to take on some risk to try to earn a return that's going to help grow those funds. That's
Bill,
how I would make the decision.
Thank you for the call, Bill. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. I'd like to get a small nuclear sub in a few years. How much would that run me?
I think the secondary market for nuclear subs, I'm not sure what it is, but it could be
a nice retirement thing.
It would. It could be.
All right, back to the phones we go. Cindy in Queensbury. Cindy, you're on.
Yes, I'm calling about EFTs, exchange traded funds.
Yep.
When the market had its little blip, and I've been around for a lot of them, so I know they go away eventually. But there was a lot of concern that people could not get out of their EFT. Do you recommend EFTs?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's ETF, exchange traded funds.
ETF, so
that's
I'm fine. Sorry,
that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
yeah, exchange traded funds have been popular as of late because, number one, they're inexpensive to manage. So the internal expenses of an ETF are very, very low, which is a positive. The one problem that you brought up is the illiquidity in some cases. In other words, when you sell an ETF, you're selling it into the market, which means you need a buyer on the other side. And for most stocks that we'd think of selling in the stock market, General Electric, IBM, Apple, Google, there's a buying side pretty much all the time that's fairly sizable, and you look at the volume. So if you're going to look at ETFs, which in portfolios I do recommend at some points when they're appropriate, one of the things to look at is if you're going to buy, for example, an S&P 500 ETF, you want to look at one that has trading volume history. You know, in other words, you can go out and buy an ETF that's recently issued, and if it trades 5,000 shares a day, and the S&P 500 ETF that's been around for 10 years trades, you know, 1 million shares a day, I'd rather own the one with the larger trading volume for the purposes you mentioned, illiquidity. You can have illiquidity in any type of market asset where there's no, you know, large volume history or buying side. So good question, and you want to look at liquidity when you look at ETFs.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Cindy. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Tom Brockley today of RBC Wealth Management in Albany. In a nutshell, and before we get to the next call, explain for those of us not well-versed in all of this why the Chinese correcting their currency led to such a reaction here and in Europe.
I think when you look back at that, at the devaluation, which the reasoning behind the devaluation, and I think Hugh Johnson mentioned it last week, was they were trying to make their export market more attractive, which is the primary reason for them to do that. I don't know that that was the single cause of the correction. I think...
Is it a flock mentality or where people just go crazy and say, well, this is the end?
Here's a good example, and this is one, and again, my thought process on partially the reasons why, especially Mondays. So, you know, if you think about it, a week and a half ago, Thursday and Friday, you had numbers that came out that would indicate that there's a slowdown in China, which has been predicted because, you know...
Growth is only 7%. Lord, we'd be loving 7% we would. Here.
Now, and that's the other question is when you said growth was 15%, again, where do the numbers come from?
Yeah.
We're not dealing with necessarily complete transparency in the Chinese market, right?
Right, you are.
So we don't know that 15% ever was the growth rate really, and we don't know that 7% is the growth rate now, or it's 5 or it's 3. But then on top of the fact that you had a market in Japan or in China that was having problems early part of this year and continues to have that. And the restrictions on those markets are pretty massive, and there's a lot of information on those that can be looked at. Then you had the devaluation of the dollar.
Right.
And then on top of that, you start to take a look at, oil prices waning and commodity prices waning, because the feeling is the big commodity user and oil user would be China if their economy's dropping. All those things snowball. And at the end of the day, on Friday night, individuals now, after amassing all these monies for the past 20 years on their own, go home, read the newspaper, and about $7 trillion of IRA money is self-directed by individuals in this country, and about $6.8 trillion is in 401k plans. And what can you do on a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday with those? You can push a button on your computer, or you can call an 800 number and say, take all my money out of the S&P or my growth model portfolio and put it in cash. And Monday morning, what does the manager of those funds have to do? They have to account for all the incoming redemptions, and they have to sell assets.
Yeah.
And that puts this huge selling pressure, like the 1,000-point down day we saw on that Monday, into place. And sometimes it's an overreaction. And that's basically what this snowball and this drop happens. And then when that happens, people say, see, it's starting to crack. Now I have to get out before I have a 50% decline when I can't afford it. And it continues until the investors who say, well, I have 10, 15, 20, 30 years to invest, I'm not going to take my money out of the market, and they stay in, and that's what's left in the market is long-term investors.
Tom Brockley is our guest, and we'll get right back to the calls at 800-348-2551. So explain to me, and again, very briefly, because we will get back to the calls, what protections now are in place in the market so that they don't snowball and crash 1987, 1929,
right.
Things
well,
like that.
Well, I mean, ultimately, there's circuit breakers at different levels when you are down certain percentages, not so much point levels anymore because the percentages are different, which is another point is that I got a kick out of a couple headlines from some, you know, national news stations that showed financial data all day, and they said, you know, worst point decline in history or 20. When you're at 1,000 on the Dow, okay, a 500-point decline is massive.
Right.
When you're at 18,000 on the Dow, a 200 or 300-point correction, you have to look at percentage correction.
Yes.
Not dollar and point correction. So that's one thing that I think when you look at the headline, you got to really think about it. What I got a kick out of was the next day, they said this is the third largest increase.
It was a big day.
Okay. So it gets back to the mentality of trading versus investing.
Right.
Now, traders need to know minute by minute information, and they're going to buy and sell a stock intraday multiple times. I kind of call it the Jim Cramer effect because that's what he, you know, did.
Right.
Investors have a plan, and they basically invest in a strategic manner to meet their plan of buying a boat in 11 years or typically retiring in 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Or
in radio 100 years.
Yeah, and educating their children. When they're newborns, you have 18 years to plan. Investing is a long-term process, whereas trading is a short-term process. And the problem is a lot of times we get flip-flopped. Investors turn into traders when they panic and sell everything, thinking they can just go to cash. Well, when are you going to buy back?
Well, this is where professionals, yourself and many others, have that big picture, do you think that the advent of so many of these online trading, where the person now becomes in charge, can lead to this kind of volatility?
To a certain extent, absolutely. Absolutely, especially with the volume, as I just mentioned, $13.5 trillion at the end of this past December, as it calculated in a study that we looked at, $13.5 trillion controlled by individuals who can push a button on their computer and say, I want to be out of the market. Now, emotion takes over when you're thinking about it. Two things, your health, your kid's health, your money.
Yeah.
Emotion. God forbid, your pet or your child gets hit by a car right in front of your house. You panic. You hope to call 911. You run out. You may get hit if you don't watch both ways. Your market drops, the newspaper, the press, boom, boom, boom. It's going to be terrible. It's going to correct. What do you do? Get out.
Yeah.
Panic creates problems.
Let's go back to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Andrew in Shelburne Falls, thanks for waiting. You're on. Oh, I'll press the button again, Ray. Boy, what an incompetent. Go ahead, Andrew. You're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Mr. Broccoli, for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm interested in your advice about solar energy investments. If I had, say, $20,000 to $30,000 to invest and good sun on my roof, what would you think about that in terms of comparing that to other opportunities for that capital?
Well, when you say investing, I don't know if you're talking about maybe putting solar panels on your roof to save yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a bias because I have 10 solar panels on my roof.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, tell me a little more about that.
Yeah, I think
as a good 25-year investment, say.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good thing to look at. If you're as a homeowner and if you're going to stay in your home, number one, because if you're going to think about maybe upsizing or downsizing in the near future, then you will lose some of the tax credit you may receive, which is something you want to check with your CPA or accountant on, because there is a tax advantage to doing some solar or alternative energy. And then really you can
I'm here for the long haul. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to help you. Then you factor out what your current usage is, factor out what you'll most likely be able to bring in your home from solar. And then at that point, you can calculate out a real financial number of how much will I save and what's my recovery period, which is really, it's as simple as that to calculate the financials. Because I've gotten several questions in the past few years about investing in alternative energies, which have gone kind of through the loop. I mean, solar as an investment in individual companies has been really volatile and some real problem.
No. But when you look at your 10 solar panels and what you paid to put them on your roof,
mm-hmm.
how would you compare that investment to your other investments?
Well, it's a different type of investment. I mean, that to me becomes me paying myself back and then getting my excess return after I've paid off my solar panels to paying that to National Grid or the supplier. So to me, it's a matter of if you have the funds available and you can utilize it, number one, it's a great green process to go through. You're saving, you know, not only some money, but you're also saving the environment. So you get a two-edged sword there. So I think it makes sense personally as long as you run the numbers and you can make some financial benefit from it.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Andrew. Over to Steve in Queensbury. Steve, you're on.
Yeah, I want to ask about Roth versus traditional IRA. So I started playing around with equations, and it's like you got a principal, and then you have the performance of the market, and then you do the tax thing.
Yep.
And it's like the order doesn't matter. It's just the principal is not going to change, and the behavior of the market is not going to change. So the only thing I can get is that it's a tax bracket problem.
It's a tax issue.
Yeah, so if you pay your taxes now with a higher rate, then it's kind of dumb because how many people have a higher tax rate when they're retired? So I don't really see the sense of Roth IRAs. And another question is this over 50? I'm over 50, right? It's $6,500 a year for IRA distribution. Does that include both traditional and Roth? And then so the question is, Roths really don't make no sense to me unless you have a higher tax bracket when you're old. Who has that? And the other question is the Roth included in the $6,500? Because if it wasn't, then it would make sense to put everything beyond $6,500 into a Roth. I guess that's all I got.
Yeah, well, one thing I'd do is I would definitely verify with your CPA or tax advisor, but the combination of both Roth and IRA contributions is combined for that number, and that's based upon the catch-up, as you said, over 50. But again, check with your CPA or tax advisor. The other question you mentioned is the calculation of should I do a Roth or a regular traditional IRA. if you can take the current tax deduction, that's the big issue. If you don't need the current tax deduction and you can save in a Roth, you have tax-deferred growth, and when you withdraw the money, there's no tax at that point. But you mentioned it. The big question is, what will your tax bracket be at retirement? No one knows that, so you're making an assumption. And the historical assumption has always been, well, I'll be in a lower tax bracket at retirement, so I would just assume put my money away, get a current tax break, and take my money out at a lower bracket. But the problem today is we don't know what the tax bracket will be at retirement, and you may have an equal or higher tax bracket at retirement. I hope most of my clients have a higher tax bracket at retirement because that means I've made them more money.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
You can have a higher tax bracket when you're older.
You could.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Thomas Brockley is our guest. We talk finance, and the home stretch is on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements, noble-home.net. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades, shannonrose.com. TJ's Taylor Rental and Party Plus, owners Jim and Tamara Falcone, providing tool and equipment rentals, tents, bounce houses, water slides, and party supplies for events. TJsTaylorRental.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Old Castle Theater Group, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting Black Comedy by Peter Schaefer, an enlightening farce that begins when the lights go out, through September 6th, oldcastletheater.org for tickets.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Thomas Brockley is our guest. And before we get to the calls, what's the one thing about the future of the markets that makes you nervous? The one thing that maybe every now and then you might wake up in the middle of the
one thing?
Biggest thing.
I think to me it would be kind of global sustainability. That would be it. And what I mean by that is, you know, the world population and its growth. And at what point are we at a you know, point of no return from just sustaining what we need to sustain from all sorts of reasons, energy, food, water, that. But I mean, that's a long way off, I think. But I mean, to me, it's the real, when will this all be just too much?
Yeah. All right, back to the phone. And thanks for depressing me even more. Now, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Hi. Question. I run a business and have for many years, and I don't plan to ever fully retire. I don't believe I probably can fully retire, although my wife will retire. She works for the state. My question is, if even though I don't fully want to retire, you know, with clients, I may around 10 years from now want to cut back on my client base and just become sort of like a part-time business. The best way with 10 years out before I consider it, what would be the best type of investment? Would it be in bonds or would it be more in stocks? And I know they talk about when you get older like I am, that safe stocks. Any suggestions as far as the direction?
Well, I think you need to kind of take a little bit more time. I'd need a little bit more time than I could give you a specific recommendation. Need more information specifically. So if you have an advisor now, I'd probably paint that scenario for them, or, you know, contact someone that, you know, or, you know, someone through family or friends that they use and talk to them. But for the most part, if you've got a 10-year time horizon, then beyond that, you're going to generate some income from the investment, probably some type of a mixture of an asset allocation between, you know, equity and fixed income is going to be the most sensible. And the exact percentage is going to depend on a few things, your risk tolerance and your your capability to handle risk and understanding of the ups and downs of the market and time frames and how much you're going to save. So it's a lot of factors to consider, but probably a balance.
Thanks, Mark, for the call. So how do you, in fact, is there an equation for risk tolerance?
Risk tolerance, there's an equation for it in the sense of what's your time horizon and what will you need from the portfolio is a factor that we kind of put together with each client. But then a bigger part, Ray, is comfortability. My final kind of point with clients when I'm meeting with them the first time is I can give you the perfect financial plan and the perfect allocation for your time horizon, but if you can't sleep at night, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Because there's no sense in panicking and being worried and getting anxiety over your portfolio.
So part of your job is to be a psychologist for your clients.
Yep.
It's all right.
And it's a reminder, too. Remember, most people spend more time planning in their vacations than they do their retirement because it's more fun.
Right.
When you start looking at your balance sheet and go, how much do I need to put away over how many years, at what rate of return to get me a dollar of value that's going to generate me income for the rest of my life, it's not something people want to tend to sit down and do on a Sunday.
And well, it's a much more immediate return when you're planning your vacation.
And I think it makes more sense to plan that and have fun.
All right, let's go back to the line. And Art in Pittsfield. Art, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Mr. Broccoli.
Thank you.
I have a question. My son and I were discussing some of his investments. He's approaching age 50, and he's telling me that his financial advisor has guided him into this fund that is classified, I think, as a BDC. And he claims that he is guaranteed an 8% return on his money per year and has been getting that. And recently, the fund in which he bought has gone public and so is traded on the on an exchange with a stock value of about $10 a share. The expenses are rather high for the broker and for the transactions, and I keep telling him that I think that this is an awfully risky investment for him to make with all his funds. Can you give me some more information about these particular funds?
Yeah, I'd have to look into that closer because any time you've got a guarantee, especially in today's world of interest rates of 8%, there's one thing that my mother told me a long time ago. if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So
I wish you could tell him that.
I don't know the specific fund you're talking about, but typically a guaranteed return of that magnitude over a time period is difficult. I know there's some annuities that have guaranteed income streams, but the actual value of the investment being guaranteed to have an 8% return, I'd look into that much more deeply because that doesn't sound like something that I could recognize.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the fund mostly invests in lower quality junk bonds and risky loans to developing companies.
Yeah, well, and if it does that, then, you know, a guarantee of 8% obviously is only as good as the companies within the portfolio. So I'd be very leery of that type of a situation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Art. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Thomas Broccoli of RBC Wealth Management is our guest. Let's go to Terry in Middleburg. Middlebury or Middleburg?
Middlegrove.
Middle Grove. None of the above. Well, you're on, Terry. Go ahead.
I had an additional question about the Roth.
Yep.
The way I understand it, the Roth is invested, and you would get interest on it. And if that is correct, is the interest taxed when you take it out?
No. Anything earned inside the Roth is not taxed when you take it out, unless it's, you know, prior to 59 and a half. However, a Roth is nothing more than an umbrella. An IRA account or a Roth account, if you think about it, picture that as an umbrella. And what makes up the umbrella is the tax rules and codes that are set by the IRS. What you actually invest in under the umbrella of a Roth or an IRA can be whatever you want. It can be a stock fund, a bond fund, a CD, a guaranteed account. So depending upon what you should be investing in based upon your time horizon and risk tolerance, that's what is going to give you the return of a Roth. And then, of course, when you withdraw the money from the Roth, there's no tax liability, which is the big advantage. And you're not obligated to withdraw a Roth at 70 and a half like you would in a traditional IRA. So
in that scenario, it seems like a Roth would be better than IRA because not only, well, everything that you put into an IRA is pre-tax, and you have to pay the taxes on that plus the any interest that you gained in your investment.
In a traditional account, correct. But it depends, right. Depends on each individual person, whether they want the current tax break or they want a deferred income without any tax. It depends on what they feel. If, for example, if you knew you were going to inherit, you know, several million dollars when you, you know, reach 60 from a trust of some sort or an inheritance from an in-law, you may realize you'll be in a higher bracket and you might not, you know, want the tax on a withdrawal from an IRA, so you'd use a Roth. But it depends on your individual situation.
Okay. But to simplify it, if I could just quick for my mind, if I take $1,000 of pre-tax and put it in an IRA and I get a $1,000 return on it for a total of $2,000, if I take an after-tax $1,000 and put it in, this thousand and gain $1,000 for a total of $2,000, I wouldn't pay any tax on that second $1,000.
No.
Whereas in the IRA, I'd be paying taxes on both, right?
Right. But you have to factor that when you make the $1,000 contribution to the traditional IRA, you get a tax deduction.
Ah.
Right.
So you have to factor that in. Yeah.
Terry, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now. Over to Jim in Pittsfield. Jim, you're on with Thomas Broccoli.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. About 15 years ago, I became disabled while I was working for GE and had to take a retirement. So I took all of my GE retirement and put it into a rollover IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I was thinking about taking that IRA and putting it into an index one. And I'm wondering, number one, is that a good idea? Number two, is that protected by any sort of government agency? I can't seem to determine that right now from what I've been able to look up so far. Right.
Well, number one, whether the index fund, which depending upon, you know, index funds could be a stock, a bond index, a balance index. So depending on what type of index fund would really depend on, again, what your objectives are, what your time horizon is, what your risk tolerance is, and, you know, what you're looking to do with that pool inside your IRA. The second
Right now, I've put everything into a fairly quiet mutual fund. So everything is about 90% mutual funds right now.
Right.
My wife's getting ready to retire. We're both 64 right now, and she's getting ready to retire shortly. So we're trying to keep everything modest as far as risk goes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any protection for index funds like the
FDIC? No, I mean, if you buy a standard S&P index fund, for example, you know, the market risk is what you'll receive, the ups and downs. There's no guaranteed or floor. I mean, there are some investment vehicles and products you can probably look at that would have some types of floor, an equity-linked CD, for example, that's linked to the S&P, but those are a little bit more detailed and intricate, and I definitely would seek some assistance from somebody if you're going to look at those options.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate the call, and this one came in via email, and I think you touched on this already, but this is from Quick, somebody named Quick. My company offers a 401k and a Roth 401k. Taxes are taken out now, not later. Is the Roth a good idea, or what should one consider when deciding? And we've talked about
this. Right, and that basically, I think you have to sit down and you run a financial calculation, which are available on many different websites. You can go to your own 401k provider's website through an employer, and you can run a calculation that shows contribution to a pre-tax 401k or the post-tax Roth, and it'll give you a general idea, assuming certain factors you'll plug in, as to what the best financial choice is. But a Roth versus an IRA since the advent of Roths, have become a tough situation because the unknown factor is what will my tax bracket be at retirement?
You got to assume taxes will be higher in the future.
history would tell us that at retirement you might be in a lower bracket because you don't have your full income from your job, but now that they're going to have started to tax Social Security more,
right,
and that if you have a pension that's taxable, you know, a lot of people today that have planned well for retirement don't retire with any less income.
Mm.
So therefore, the income level really guides the tax bracket level. So it's a tough question, and it's something you have to kind of sit down and run through the numbers on.
Let's go to Chuck in Albany. Chuck, you're on with Thomas Broccoli.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I've got a question regarding kind of excess 401k contributions. I'm 32 years old. My wife is 30. We've been both kind of fortunate enough to, and I guess diligent enough that for the past several years, we've been contributing 10% of our paycheck, just like a flat 10%, into our 401k. We both have one, and I've started thinking more about it and realizing that, you know, that's a fair amount more than what we'll get from an employer match. And so my question is anything over what we get matched, does it make sense to continue to put into that same employer 401k, or should we have some other vehicle that it would make sense for us to put the additional contribution into?
That's a good question, and I think the first point would be is when you sit down and look at your long-term goals for retirement in this case, you want to take a look at what your objectives would be for income needs, what your future situation may be, which is always a tough question because when you sit down at 30, 32, as you said, you and your wife, it's hard to picture when do I retire and what will I want to do. But if you kind of plan out, am I going to stay local? Am I going to go buy a second home? Am I going to travel back and forth to two environments, two climates, which a lot of people do? You know, you're going to need a second home and so forth. So knowing what you might be able to project as your retirement income need would then lead you to understand how much you should be putting away and at what return, and that would lead you to determine, should I put in this much into a retirement plan? I don't think it hurts you if you're really planning on saving for retirement to put in an excess over the match portion of a 401k. You're going to be saving more money for yourself. You can always make an adjustment down the road to less if you want to. But I think initially I'd continue to save for retirement at that level if that's the pool of funds that you're trying to build.
Chuck, thank you very much. Over to Bill in Hudson. Bill, you're on with Thomas Broccoli.
Yes. Excuse me. Hi. I recently inherited about $100,000 from my mother when she passed away, and I'm trying to find out if there's a good way for me to invest it where I can't get my hands on it, or at least a portion of that money where I can't get my hands on it too easily, because I tend to spend it when I shouldn't be, and right now I just want to sock it away. And I'm just wondering if the guest has any suggestions.
Yeah, I mean, I would seek probably, if you have a family attorney or maybe the attorney who handled the estate, talk to them about an irrevocable trust for part of it, which would mean you might name a trustee, a corporation or a corporate trust department, and you put part of that money in an irrevocable trust, which you can utilize potentially some of the cash flow, if you will, and income for needs that meet certain requirements. But it would then tie up the portion of the principal you put in because, money burns a hole in pockets sometimes. And if you want to avoid that and you're saying to yourself, I know I'm going to spend it, you can put it in that type of a vehicle and have it invested. Or you can use, for example, an annuity where there's a tax penalty and a withdrawal penalty to take it out early, which could prohibit you. But, those are the ways I'd kind of look at places where you would be penalized to take it out or just, frankly, couldn't take it out unless you broke the trust in an irrevocable basis. But I check with a legal advisor on that one as well.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Now, an irrevocable trust, what if there was a major emergency? You're stuck.
It depends on how the trust is written. And, again, I know you've had some legal folks on here, and that's a legal question. But if you're writing, if I wanted to put money into a trust, for example, myself for purposes, whether it's for future children or for multiple reasons, when I'm designing it for myself, I can put in certain exit clauses. Now, there could be some financial penalty to do that.
Yeah.
And it also stops some things, but that you can put those in place.
Thomas Broccoli, always great to have you on this program. And if you at home have never checked out the WAMC program guide, every month Thomas supplies a column. And you'll learn so much. If this is something that you haven't really had on your radar, these thoughts, Thomas's columns are really good read. You can find out at wamc.org, and you'll find the program guide there. You can check it out. Hey, man, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Support for WAMC comes from H. House & Son True Value Hardware and Just Ask Reynolds Woodstock, locally owned since 1932, featuring Benjamin Moore paints, tools, and materials for home maintenance. Behind every project is a True Value. H. House. .com. The Whistling Kettle Tea Shop and Cafe in Ballston Spa, celebrating the one-year anniversary of the cafe in downtown Troy, New York, featuring a private room for parties and special events, thewhistlingkettle.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, an 18th-century farm on the banks of the Mohawk River, featuring interactive exhibits, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults, accepting reservations for basket weaving and blacksmithing workshops, Schenectady Historical.org. and Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows, empireexhibits.com. Thanks again to Thomas Broccoli for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls and the email. Remember, the conversation continues online, wamc.org/voxpop. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.